Hey, this is Dr. Drew, and you are listening to This Life
with Bob Forrest
and Dr. Drew.
Here we are.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, gather round your iPhone 7S, I think it's called now. It's time for This Life with Dr. Drew and Bobby Forrest.
That's right, and this episode is courtesy of BergamotNA.com and the National Assessment Foundation.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
Down there all the time.
Yes.
It's trying to equalize things, trying to help people that don't have insurance, people that are underinsured, I think is how you call it in the politically correct world.
Non-insured.
Which is a majority of Americans.
Well, certainly addicts.
Addicts.
Yeah.
And trying to find placement for them.
Oh my God. I take chronic medical medication and I ordered my meds today and I looked at that. Three of the medicines that I use, and I use several, $700 each for a 90-day supply. I was like, oh my God, that's $2,000 a quarter. It's like, I can't, that's just for three of them. I have like five.
I was
stunned. And that's, my insurance pays, 80% of that, whatever. But medications, I understand why
people
are so upset. So
what's happening in America
it.
Is only elite PPO union insurance really gets treatment.
Well, and you know what that's like. I've fought those insurance companies my whole career.
So the National Assessment Foundation finds placement for everybody across the board.
You call in? It's a call-in.
Call in. You get assessed. You get assigned a caseworker that tries to help you find
connect
the dots with treatment. It's 888-494-9186.
Okay, National. So if you
we
need...
post that up.
If you need trouble, if you need help...
If you need trouble, ask
you're
Bob
in trouble.
Forrest.
Yeah, Bob Forrest is trouble. The other voice is Simone Bien, who I'll be introducing.
If you need help, call Simone.
In mere moments. But this is the reason Bob and I got behind these guys is that they're not just placing people in treatment who have insurance. They're helping everyone that calls in.
Yes.
And that's a big
amazing.
Deal.
No now, one's ever done it before.
And are they run by a charity?
Yeah.
Well, sort of. It's a not-for-profit. But,
right. Okay.
But they're, I don't think people... they should be a charity. They should think of themselves as a charity, really, because they offer, they have very well-trained people manning the phones who call back.
They sound amazing.
They stay after people till they get into treatment. It is amazing.
Yeah, and I do it sometimes. I'm down there twice a week, right? And so I'm working with this guy for like 2 days, and then finally I say, we got a place for you in Michigan. He goes, Michigan? I don't want to go fucking Michigan.
Which, again, but there's
two drug addicts.
Right. There's two parts
of that. Cancer treatment in Michigan, you'd fucking go.
That's exactly right. So there's two prongs to that story. That is A, what the point you just made, which is make sure you're ready for treatment.
Uh-huh.
And B, these people are going to the mat to find it anywhere, real treatment somewhere that will either take your insurance or take you for free or whatever it is. Also, our friends at Bergamot, order today, you get 10% off at checkout if you type in DRDREW. And please do visit doctor.com, click on the Amazon banner for all your shopping needs. We thank you for your support. We also hope to be hearing from you in the comments on iTunes. We like to see those 5-star ratings. Please subscribe there and at doctor.com. And
and since we're talking about Italy, I wanted to say Ian Brennan, the guy that was here, that's
Italy
from Bergamot.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
They had a baby and they named the baby CURE, which means heart in Italian.
Cor.
Remember
his wife
is from Bergamot.
His wife is from Calabria, which is where the Bergamot fruit is from that Bergamot is made. And all these polyphenols are becoming a big deal right now. Bergamot has the highest concentration available and the best studied of all the polyphenols out there. And by the way, because my prescriptions are all expired and terribly costly, I'm switching to Bergamot for a little while. Exclusively, yes, I am. I'm going to go back on my usual meds, but I will switch for a while.
Simone, are you following this?
I sort of am.
Don't you want to get on it?
I want to say, the takeaways I have is that it doesn't matter how much it costs to keep Drew alive. We're doing it.
Okay, good. Well, I'll come to you next time I need my shirt, my meds
refilled. Number one. Number two, I'm still mesmerized by Bob calling his daughter with the middle name Magic. So that's made me happy.
So
and number three, that there are good people in America doing really, really good things.
There really are.
Yeah, which I love giving back. Yeah. I just think, oh, bless them.
Now, Simone, talked to people that may have missed you last time you were on this podcast.
Oh, and Bob's Trouble.
Explain who you are. That goes without saying. Explain who you are, what you're doing.
I am a very good friend of yours.
Yes.
I just had to remind him.
I know that.
And so I've known Bob for years as well. And so, obviously, Drew, you and I, we did...
Loveline
together. Mm-hmm. And I was on Rehab with you, helping the female...
Yeah.
Clients.
Yes.
Ladies.
I'd forgotten we subjected you to that whole experience. Bob and
it
I.
was amazing,
yeah,
actually.
It was
one of, actually, just to say that because I have, I'm a child of addiction, and working with young addicts and with you, I sort of like, and the whole team, but it was one of the most transformative experiences for my relationship with the addict in my family.
Oh, nice. Well,
that's what people say from the show. It's so weird.
Much deeper understanding and compassion.
I would argue a lot of that is this team we have with Bobby and Shelley and Louisha and Sasha. This was Camelot when we were a professional team together working at a hospital. And we did it for next to nothing. I swear to God.
I remember you telling me.
We did. I mean, Bob, it's so ridiculous.
You were something like 11.
Drew hired me, I was working at a pizza parlor. I was going to take a pay cut to go work as a counselor. Swear to God, I was working at the hippest pizza parlor in Silver Lake.
Yeah, we did it for like 10 years, and we're never acknowledged what we were doing. We could deal with the worst of the worst. Everyone else couldn't handle them. We got them. We could do what we could.
A lot of people still sober. I get text messages every birthday from all these people from all over.
It was Camelot, I swear to God. You look back at that and you go, oh my God, how did somebody not realize what we were doing? Compared to what's going on today, especially.
Yeah.
So anyway, there's some Camelots out there. You got to find them, though. You got to really find them.
It's hard to hold it together. I got one going to Malibu. It's hard to hold it together, because, and if you look at what happened to that team, Shelly runs a program with 82 fucking clients.
Louisa,
I would rather be dead than dealing with 82 clients.
Oh, yeah, she texted me. By the way, Susan, Shelly.
82!
Shelly texted me, wants
me
to come.
Oh, my gosh.
Wants me to come speak at her treatment centers, which I'm happy to do.
Yeah, that would be good.
Maybe you want to turn it into something. My wife, the producer here, she can make a pot out of it or something.
Louisa runs Refuge in Hollywood. Yeah. That's like 35. That's a manageable number of people.
Is it an outpatient group? Or
outpatient. Yeah. And so I work in Temecula and Malibu. So like it all just blew up and went in different directions, which is historic of the treatment industry. The original Synanon group, the guys that ran Synanon,
describe what Synanon is.
Synanon was a cult drug treatment program. Do you know about it?
I heard about it, but professor.
They tried to kill one of the guys by putting a cobra in the mailbox. Mm. Kind of
it's no big deal, though.
Yeah.
These are Bob's people.
Why there isn't a documentary about Synanon?
Yeah, there has to be, because I only heard about it a few weeks ago with a professor who was doing amazing work in the drug treatment area. And he was talking about that, and I'm not joking. I was like, my mind was blown.
Well, what is your point about it?
So when that blew up, when the murder investigation and the whole thing blew up, the counselors who worked there, you want to know who they were?
There were some good ones.
Harold Owens, Jack at Cry Help.
Wow.
Still Impact staff members.
So they were good.
So it blew, all the good people that worked there blew up and scattered across Southern California.
Oh, that's
all
good.
These great programs. Mm, right? Because the fish stinks from the head, really.
There should be a documentary, but wasn't it very abusive?
Yeah.
Punitive
and cult-like, and if you left, you were kind of like Scientology.
I wasn't brave enough to say it.
Scientology people outside my house.
But it was, didn't you have to sign up for 10 years?
Yeah, there you go.
You signed up for 10 years.
Yeah. Crazy,
but
all right. So you're describe more of your work.
Right. So I call
Simone in when I need some empathy, somebody to be deeply empathic, and to help somebody tolerate interpersonal closeness, and to reach their own feelings and appreciate that in other people. they're reluctant to recover many times in one way or another. The trauma survivor, stuff like that too. So that's what Simone is really, really good at. And they keep going.
And on sort of on that sort of skill basis, I now do neurolinguistic programming, which is a very peculiar word, which doesn't actually mean anything, except the work that you do, which is basically it's all about how we use language and meaning, how we can it's talking to the unconscious mind.
Well, I was so surprised you went to that. And I have no quarrels with it, but because you're so intuitive and already so in touch with all that, I was surprised you needed that cognitive piece.
Well, it was interesting because when I've worked with clients, now some of the techniques that they do are like they are phenomenal. And there's a part of it that is very intuitive because I got trained by people who are really spiritual and sort of like very much sort of, you know, coming from my values. When I work with some of my clients and I introduce some NLP techniques, I did have, and I'm going to say this because I learned a big lesson. I did have two of my favorite clients come to me going, Simone, I came to you because you
didn't want that. Didn't want it.
And then I was like, okay. Yeah. And so now, and I'm so grateful. It's like, you know, when we are in work, how we learn from the people we see as well.
Oh, for sure.
So it was good. You know, almost when like you first learn how to be angry, when you've got anger and you sort of go 180 degrees and then you're just like, oh, hold on a minute. Now I'm come back in the middle. I think I was an overly keen student.
Well, but
now,
it must have been impactful for you personally.
It was doing something totally.
What was it?
Totally. So there's I'm going to talk about something which I think is so out of this world and so incredible. It's a process called timeline. You can call it timeline therapy or timeline technology. And what it does is it removes our memories from the amygdala, from the fight or flight place, and puts the memories that have been deemed super traumatic.
Yeah. Disavowed.
Disavowed, and it puts them in the hippocampus.
Well, that's what EMDR and all these other things are supposed to do. There's all these different techniques for this.
Right. Well, what is so beautiful about this is it's like a conscious... it's consciously talking to your unconscious. And what is so beautiful is while I am there facilitating it and guiding it, it's actually the person themselves talking to their unconscious mind, connecting with their unconscious mind.
Wouldn't they have to start meditating first to even know?
I've now discovered this whole new way to get into meditating, which is through my travels working with a guru in India, which sounds... So LA, it's ridiculous, but it's very beautiful.
But it's still sort of mindfulness, you know.
Yeah, but
one way or another can see.
Well, it is and it isn't. It's, mindfulness, depending, what do we mean by mindfulness?
That's what I said, one way or another conceived.
Yes.
Because it's many different things.
So what happens is, when, first of all, you have to introduce somebody to the idea and get them on board that, okay, we have an unconscious mind, which I know sounds crazy, and that... I believe all change happens.
Doesn't sound crazy to us.
All right. Well, no, it's like that some people don't know.
Okay.
But some people don't know.
Or don't appreciate it.
So we talk about how all change happens at an unconscious level. So we are working, I am working with somebody's unconscious mind. I'm using language patterns to connect so that I'm talking with their unconscious. I know what their conscious mind is doing
why not go to old-fashioned psychoanalytic techniques?
Oh my god, it's because they're completely the opposite. Because okay, let me I really
it takes
Drew,
years
because it takes years. And okay, I'm so sorry, Drew. Oh, hold on, I have to calm down. Everybody listening, just breathe for me. Oh, I can feel that breathing. Fantastic. Now I'm calm and I'll say this. I have an issue with talking about our problems over and over again.
But that's not what psychoanalysis is. Psychoanalysis is specifically somebody trained to pick out symbols and themes that the patient is unaware of and require them to step out of that
really
cycle.
Nobody's really doing that, Drew. They're just regurgitating over and over again. That's why I keep trying to
that's
tell you.
That's not true. Have you ever been in psychoanalysis? You've been in analysis?
I've been to the Jungian Center for 4 years.
Oh, gosh,
well,
wow.
Jung, I don't dig.
I love Jung.
I like the ideas, but not as a therapeutic thing. Although he
I just love the people. They're so interesting.
Yeah. So let me just tell you about this process and try and make it clear.
But let's just clear up this thing. So much mediocrity is going on in every area of American life, including therapy.
Okay. Right?
Drew,
sure.
You said that to me.
That's for sure.
For many years.
Who's making it mediocre? The health insurance companies.
Yes.
All right. That's all we need to know. So when you pay cash, which the service is worth cash, because it's how you find peace of mind and wholeness. But most people don't want to pay because they go to therapy and they go, I'm not going to pay $300 or $200.
Because they don't value themselves.
Because they don't value they're fearful of getting mediocre care, I think.
Ah, interesting.
Well, it's so slow and so long that you're paying, you're not getting a reward. You know, when you pay that kind of money, you get something back immediately.
This gives
you try harder to gain insight. I tell you, I paid cash. Sure. You try harder.
Well, that's very and there is. Yeah.
So I think that's what she was touching on.
So give me, use me as an example. Take me in. Let's go do a little subconscious work.
Okay.
Come on.
Let's do it this way. It's a whole process.
Okay.
Let me explain the process and let me almost do it as if we're going through it.
Okay.
Because I don't want you to do it and for it, I mean, it will work, but it might not work like this.
Okay.
So we're just going to talk you through it. Okay.
Right. Hey,
so
you could be a politician.
It's my NLP training. Uh-oh.
So this is different than the NLP.
So it is part of NLP. It's like an offshoot of NLP. Mm-hmm. And what NLP doesn't tend to do, there's a
neurolinguistic
system.
Processing. Yeah.
There's a system like this in NLP, but it doesn't go as deep.
Okay.
This was created
Does this have a name?
It does. It's called Timeline Therapy, and it was created by somebody called Tad James. Tad James is
now when you
a
say Timeline
hippie.
Therapy, one of the big things that people don't do that is done in good treatment. Which is the first thing you do is sit down and do a timeline of your life. And you go through every single... And then you go back through your timeline. And you go back through your timeline to try to bring out more and more and more of the traumas.
Right. Well, this is almost very different.
Okay.
It's almost the opposite. So this is... Let's do it. Both of you do it. And you can just get a sense. And then we can do it for real when we have a bit more time. So both of you stand up. And anyone listening, do this... along with us, wherever you are. Doesn't matter if you're in the gym, just stop, because this is just, I think this is really fantastic. So just take a breath first, because I just want everybody, I might be saying that for myself. I've got very Indian. I'm getting like, take a breath. Well, this is us keeping the prana up, keeping our energy up, which is why Drew just like completely
my shoulder hurts.
Okay, so taking a nice deep breath. And do you understand that the brain has a timeline? So I'm going to say that it's where we store our memories. Mm-hmm. And it isn't in a linear order. It isn't sort of like, oh, and when I was 7 and when I was 8 and when I was 9. Mm-hmm. This is looking at it as in if something great happened, and then something great happened again. If something great happened when I was 7 and something great happened when I was 23, it would kind of go in the similar, oh, these are great experiences. Mm-hmm. So it stores it sort of emotionally. That means that if we do this process. I know I'm talking a lot about the process without doing it, which can be confusing, but then it can also be meditative. You can change, can you not?
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful.
Someone's voice putting you into a trance? Is that what's happening here, Bob?
Then what happens is that once you get rid of the core, which is like the deep root, then it's a gestalt. So it's like a bead. A pearl necklace, says the sex therapist, but a real pearl necklace in the sense of like all the emotions and all the events are tied together like a domino effect. Mm-hmm. Drew's looking at me. I'm just letting everyone know he's looking at me disbelievingly, but it's all right. You're going to experience it for yourself because you're not. Anyway, let's just go for it. So If I were to ask your unconscious mind, and let me first ask, is it okay if I talk to your unconscious mm-hmm. mind? Mm-hmm. Great. Yeah. I have your permission.
Mm-hmm.
Drew?
Yes, you do.
There
yes,
we go. polarity responder to my right. I'm joking. Right. if I was to ask your unconscious mind where the future is, I have a feeling it would say straight ahead or to the right or behind or to the left.
Oh, so that's we're supposed to
if
give
I ask
you
your
that?
Unconscious mind now where the future is, can you point to where the future is? Okay, fantastic. Great. So just to let everyone know, Drew is pointing to the right and Bob is pointing to the left. So he's pointing
like
out of there.
Yeah.
That's very, do you know, that's so funny because I was actually going to mention that a lot of people do have the timeline. Hold on, let me get it right. So where the past is here on the right and the future is on the left.
Drew did it the opposite
way. Interesting. Yeah, it doesn't matter. Any way you do it is perfect.
But let me tell you.
With politicians.
Go ahead.
With politicians. This is just watch for politicians because when they talk, they will emphasize, when they're talking, they will emphasize with their hand on the right saying, we know that this doesn't work. And what we're going to do. So they're signaling with the right and the left. And so they're like programming this.
What does that mean when they go like that right at you?
Oh, well, that
you know that thing?
Mm-hmm. Ah. Well, that means, like, I've got the remote.
Yeah.
Yes. Or it might be someone being really nice going, change channel because I'm about to hypnotize you and ruin your life forever. No. Okay, so, and if I was to ask your unconscious mind where your past is, where would it point? Perfect.
I'm going behind.
Okay, great. So, perfect. Perfect. So if you put what they're doing now, everyone listening, is they're putting their arms out and Drew has gone to the opposite side and Bob has gone to the opposite side, which is just a little bit off center. You're like me, little bit wonderful, curvy mind off center, which is nice. So you notice that they are mm-hmm. aligned.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic. Okay. What I'm going to ask you to do now is if you've noticed they're aligned, I would like you to, if here is now, mm-hmm. and so you're standing on your feet, and everyone do this at home, so you've done the future and the past, and now I would like you to close your eyes. And as you close your eyes, I would like you to float up above your timeline. High, high, high above your timeline.
Can I ask a question?
No.
Okay.
Unless it's your unconscious mind talking to me. But you can ask a question, but
no,
that means you're overthinking.
I'll just go wherever it goes.
Yeah, yeah. To trust your unconscious mind, and that's really important for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
So as you float up, I want you to just float into the past, and when you're there, let me know.
I think I'm there.
Okay. And Bob, if you want to go higher up, above your timeline, and then back into the past. We're not actually going to any specific event. We're just high up in the sky, or wherever you may be. Bob, are you there?
Mm-hmm.
Great. And now I'd like you to float all the way ahead to the future and let me know when you're there.
I'm there.
Great.
Mm. Yeah.
And now come back to now. Not in the room, but just above on your timeline to the present day. And now go out to the future again. And let me know when you're there.
There.
Great.
There.
Perfect. And now come back to now. And whenever you're ready, just float down into the room. And Bob, what did you have for breakfast?
Cereal.
Great. What did you have?
Coffee.
Of course. Great. Okay. So how was that experience? This was us getting ready for Timeline. How was that experience?
Well, it had a hypnotic quality, which I dig, uh-huh. which is fun.
Great.
And it seemed more wish fulfillment than anything. Confusing. It seemed confusing.
Okay.
Yeah.
That good. That means that could you, the most important thing was, could you, what did you see?
Like, it didn't make sense to me. It was confusing.
Right. Yeah. So what we would do, Drew, when we go into it, is we would work
to clarify
that. Well, we wouldn't clarify it. I would work with you to actually switch off your critical thinking and just like put it to one side. It's the critical factor.
See, this to me feels exactly like what psychoanalysis felt like.
Ah,
that's
okay.
Mine connected the dots. So
mine did not. Mine just let me
with my
do
insight,
exactly what you're talking
with
about.
Two different tracks of therapy. The time I felt safe in my life was with my dad. Right, the day he died, before I found out about it, he came to me in a dream, and we flew out over the desert where mm-hmm. I grew up. Mm-hmm. That's what I just experienced mm-hmm. again. So I go back to the most safe I ever felt and the most trauma that ever mm-hmm. happened to me, the death of my dad. I do it every time. I've been in therapy for 20 years about it.
They're always connected.
They're always connected. That's why I'm striving to be the best dad. You know what I mean? And not die.
Yeah.
Right? So that's the future always. It's right. I went right to Claremont in the living room, yeah. like literally. You
With
know
your
what
kids.
I mean? Yeah. So it's very strange that I could, consistently throughout therapy, it's that. And so, like, my dad and I are on a magic carpet.
Oh.
You know what I mean? And we're flying around. And that happened the night that he died.
Mm.
It's crazy, right? What your subconscious comes up with.
Yeah. Yes, amazing.
See, and I think people misinterpret like a ghost came to me and like whatever. No, that's it's a part of you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it's trying to lead you and tell you what you need to work on. It's trying to tell you not to be scared, to be fearless.
And this is then, obviously, Bob has like sort of framed it beautifully because this is when we then go into the timeline process. And actually, I would love to do it with you both, and I will sort of I want to bring it. There's a script, and the reason that you go from the script is so that the language is absolutely precise. Mm. So I'm talking to your unconscious mind, but what happens is, and what is so beautiful, we say you go into like what's the root cause. So if you're Drew, if there's one emotion that you wanted to get rid of, and we do the whole lot, but what, let's say there was one thing you wanted to get rid of.
Get rid of anxiety.
Okay,
both anxieties.
No,
this
not
really
me.
Good.
I was okay. speaking
okay.
for
Drew. Oh, sorry. Okay, anxiety.
Yes, that would help me tremendously.
So for example, we do anxiety, but actually we go anger, fear, sadness. Now, what is so incredible about this process? We look at the root cause, and you close your eyes, and I'm going to talk you through it now. And literally anxiety, can you both pick something that is really, really incidental? Like, oh my God, Susan is 10 minutes late.
Or something no big deal. Okay,
yeah, something very, very small.
Yeah.
Like so small that it's,
So
if you close your eyes again, and I'll talk you through it, I will show you rather than talk about it. So what is... I'm talking to your unconscious mind again. Is it okay if I mm-hmm. talk to your mm-hmm. unconscious mind and for your unconscious mind to bring whatever needs to be brought forward to the conscious mind? Is it okay for your unconscious mind to do that?
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic. So what is the root cause of the event? The first event that when disconnected, it will... get rid of the anxiety, the old emotion, and will free you from this in your future. And at this point, trust your unconscious mind. Anything that comes in, and you're picking something very, very small. Anything that comes in, trust your unconscious mind. It might not make sense to your conscious mind, and that's okay. So have you both got something?
No, I'm still having trouble making sense. So hold on. Something's trying to come up.
So,
railroad, rust, I don't know, something.
Oh.
I can go very deep, very...
Well, this is what is going to be wonderful when we do it.
Because when I was second round, stuff started coming up, and I was like, that's interesting.
It's really, really fascinating.
Because you have to trust it. You have to listen to it very carefully.
Yes. Now, what is so, so, so important about timeline is we do not go into the event. So, Bob, if you've got something, then what happens is there are certain positions. So basically, you go directly above the event. This is actually not going to make any sense until we do it. But go directly above the event. We look down on the event and is what are the learnings that you need that will allow to free yourself from this, from...
Well,
now.
Mine isn't anxiety as so much as fear of tragic death at long before your time.
Right.
That's a big anxiety.
So we need to do
that. I just call it fear. I don't call it anxiety.
So
I grew up around nursing homes. So when you were talking, I'm just above our nursing home in Culver City that I'm going to end up in hospitals. And I know how that drags on for a year and a half. And that is the only thing that causes me fear and anxiety.
Right. Well, that's to your conscious mind.
I think that here's, you want to know how deep this runs?
Uh-huh.
I think that's why I wanted to die from drugs.
Ooh.
How fucking profound
to not,
is that?
To not go through that.
Yeah. I think, why is ODing and dying at 28 okay with me?
Yeah.
Totally was, Simone. You got to understand.
Wow.
It was, Drew was there. It was totally okay with me. But this
and he didn't care who he took with him.
That's where the trouble comes
well,
in.
Well, to be fair, he was saving everybody from those nursing homes. So,
yes. Nice one.
Right? So that's been a thing in therapy with me. It's like this, I witnessed it, I watched it my whole life. In your 50s.
I wonder if that R rested, whatever. I was thinking rail, ram. I wonder if I was picking up on his stuff.
You could.
Yeah.
Very
maybe
well.
Rest home was what I was.
Oh, yeah. You don't want to be there either.
No, I don't, but I'm very sensitive to what other people are doing.
Now, what we would do, and now I'm chomping at the bits to do it with you both, but what we would do is we go to the earliest event, and we do, I would make sure that we'll have some music and just make sure that our brainwaves are just super, super relaxed. We go to the earliest event. So I'm just going to share my experience just to talk you through it. So in my past, there was lots and lots and lots of multiple traumas. Mm. The main trauma, like when I saw the person with addiction, when I saw them and I thought they were dead, like on the kitchen floor.
Yeah.
And I was this high. So I was probably 5 or 6. My other parent wasn't home, and it was absolute. That was obvious trauma, and then there were multiple traumas of like being fed salt and being tried to murder.
Fed soap.
Salt.
Oh, salt.
Yeah. Yes. Which is why I've got to say I'm going to make the joke. We're all right to make the joke, which is why I was like, Drew, I mean, I need to get over this because sometimes it's really, I mean, that's why I'm not really a swallower. It's the soul. I remember we were actually out to dinner, you, me and Susan, in Pasadena some time ago. So what came into my mind wasn't one of these big traumatic experiences.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Yeah, it was basically something I didn't even think was trauma, and it was the beginning, which was when I heard the person, one of my caregivers, on the phone, and my grandmother had just died, and that was, I was 3.
Yeah.
And that was, my unconscious knew, that was the moment I started to feel unsafe, like really became, or that was what it brought up. So all it was a conversation. I remember being in Switzerland. It was a conversation that I overheard. And yet there was nothing traumatic about that. But to my unconscious mind. And so what happened was that when I went into the experience, I was like, okay, I trust my unconscious mind. When I first did it, I was like Drew, and it was like, no, not coming, because I have had like quite a big high critical factor, which is like, oh, come on, I'm there, I'm keeping you safe. And so it took me a little bit, but then when you know the process, I was like, okay, I'm trusting my unconscious mind. And then you go above the event, you look, and it's like, what do you need to learn? And this was just one of the most profound things, and it really does sound nuts, because I remember getting taught it and I was thinking, what the fuck are they talking about? Oh yeah, your life's going to change on Thursday. And it was like, oh really, like these crazy people, you know, just like typical, oh yeah, oh, life changing, transform your life. But it was totally nuts, because I went into this experience, and I was actually doing this, we were all doing this in groups when we were being trained, and I was doing this with my friend Ed. He's just a wonderful business coach. And I remember, and he wasn't a friend at the time. He was just a stranger. But I remember, and I went in and I went, oh, my God. And then I just started laughing. And my unconscious went, you're a bubble of magic. And
oh, magic.
About him or about yourself?
About my unconscious mind said to me, so I heard it. So I was, we went through, you know, you are not to blame. But then what you have to do is you transform.
So that joy caused a transformation?
Well, wait, sorry. Let me, the joy, the learnings caused the transformation. So it was just before. This came after.
So you had these connections, and then what happened? Then two days later?
Just to say, when that happened, I know I'm like, ugh. When it happened, when it said, you know, you are not to blame, we have to reframe that and say, oh, I'm okay. You did the best, you know, my parents did the best that they can with the resources they have. So we don't go into any negative language. It is positive learnings that we can get from it. And it's not bullshit learnings. It's not motivational. It's not inspirational. It's just like, actually.
Why not just more like CBT? It happened. It's not good or bad.
Because.
You know what I mean? I'm more into that type of logic.
Well, good. And that's maybe why you've been in treatment for 20 years. Sorry.
But see,
because
he's like that too.
That's just the way it is.
That's just the way.
No,
it
I'm
is.
Way more like her because I did a lot of work on that level.
How
do you get over the cynical bar of you just telling yourself yourself feel better?
Because you want to be another 20 years in therapy.
listen. I was funny this morning in the shower. Somebody asked me. I was on a radio program, and somebody asked me about. I don't know, early in my career, and I was talking about my severe workaholism. Oh, no, I was on a stage. I was on the stage last night in Fresno, and I was. They were asking me questions, and I was talking about how profound my workaholism was. And I was like, yeah, then kind of stopped. And I was like, what the hell? Why did it stop? I was literally in front of 1,000 people, and I went, oh, yeah, I went to therapy. And I thought about it again this morning, and I wasn't working on the workaholism. Everything just settled, you know, just in the process of the safe environment and the connectedness and all that stuff. And I just stopped workaholism. I just stopped doing
that.
How
beautiful. Yeah. So,
what's that? The really bad workaholism. Not the routine workaholism. My wife wants to know when.
Oh, I love
not the routine workaholism.
Not the Fresno last night till midnight or 1 in the morning and podcast 11 a.m.
Susan, you forget how bad it was. I think do you remember how bad it was? It was bad. At least it was bad for me because you know, seeing 60 patients in a day is insanity.
I witnessed the end of it, like 7 a.m. at his practice and over to Las Vegas over the thing and go to the radio show.
Yeah, you saw the end of it.
That was pretty crazy, wasn't it, Susan?
It's still bad.
No, it's no. Now because because I enjoyed.
I was dreading that.
This I enjoyed.
Right. Okay. And I think there's a key difference.
You've turned me into a workaholic.
so
now I'm an alcoholic and a workaholic.
You better enjoy both.
Stay home.
Like for me, this is not work.
I know
at all.
That's another thing about work. Yeah. I know what he's saying.
Work can be play.
Well, look at what you're doing. Can I just jump in and say, look at what you're doing because. You are.
You wonder where my hypercritical stuff comes from.
if you look at what you are doing now, you're giving back. You're sharing. Oh, you're sharing knowledge.
Of course, that's a,
you're
that's
giving a, to people.
Yeah, that's a necessary piece.
So
here's the thing, and I think so about that a lot. I think about that a lot because I share and I teach staff and I do stuff, and it's all stuff he taught me or that I learned. Even when I was learning it, it was so joyous to really fucking master something.
Yeah, sure.
Right? But one thing that I don't think I got to stick around Las Encinas long enough to make it be a drag. You know what I mean? I was really in my prime only for like 5 years.
It wasn't a drag for me at that point because things had settled down for me a bit.
You've been there 20 years. I've been there 9 years.
I know, but things settled down for me by the time. And then we
took me 4 years to understand what the fuck was going on.
But then we had...
Right, I bet.
Me too, when I was early in working with drug addicts. But the joy that we shared as a team...
Yeah, it was fun every day.
Yeah, it was always fun. But now I want to come... Do you mind kind of switch a little bit? Because I have some questions for you.
Yeah.
First of all, did you tell the story about the London Treatment Center last time you were on the show?
Yeah, she did.
She did?
Yeah. About the Priory, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The amount of lack of understanding.
Well, no, and they're becoming a brand, a franchise.
I know,
that's well put.
And
massive
I think
brand.
Since then, I saw the Amy Winehouse documentary,
and
you got to see that
she wasn't in there though. But she—that wasn't where her and Blake.
I understand that, but she was in a lot of different places.
Bob,
you know that doctor that ran the London one.
I haven't seen it. It was
atrocious. Like you can't believe
it. It was hideous.
Yeah,
and they actively
they let her and her boyfriend be in rehab together in the same room
and party and shuttle in
and
drugs.
Charge $50,000 each.
Yeah, it was
50,000 pounds
and
each.
The dad was, and there was one in the documentary. There's one doctor that they interview. And he goes, this is the conditions for treatment. I need to have a private room. I need to have my boyfriend. And he's like, no, you will not. That's insane. Do you want to get well or not? He was like very – I thought that guy knows what he's talking about. I don't know where he was, but I thought that guy knows addiction. So there are people in London that do know what they're doing. I just don't know where they are.
Well, if you know – if
hang
you
on.
Notice,
I, what I know is I got to take a break.
She did get well. Okay.
I got to take a break. Be right back.
She did get well. Then she died.
Nice. You know, I'm always happy to talk to you about our friends at Bergamot. They're the makers of a variety of supplements that use the extract from the bergamot citrus fruit, those polyphenols. That fruit is in Italy. These supplements act as a natural statin that may improve a number of cardiovascular conditions, as well as symptoms of the metabolic syndrome, which includes high blood pressure, high cholesterol, high blood sugar. As you know, I've been excited about the natural treatment since I first heard about it. I'm getting behind it. The science behind it is sound, and physicians throughout the world and cardiologists are actually using it. Now, the makers that brought you the formulation Bergamot NA, Bergamot Pro Plus, now bringing you Bergamot Sport. It provides all the same cardiovascular benefits, but has additional additives designed to aid athletes and those with a very, very active lifestyle. Bergamot Sport may help improve stamina and reduce recovery time and reduce muscle inflammation. Now, I've been taking Bergamot myself, and I suggest you talk to your physician to see if Bergamot Sport is right for you. And for a limited time, our listeners can save 10% on their order by entering the code Dr. Drew, DRDREW, at checkout. Again, that is DRDREW, all one word, at checkout, and you save 10% on your order of Bergamot. To order the Bergamot Sport for yourself, visit bergamot.com, Bergamot N-A, Bergamot, B-E-R-G-A-M-E-T.com, or click on the Bergamot banner on drdrew.com. We're back. Of course, it's this life reminder. We also want to once again thank our friends at Bergamot for being so supportive and being our sponsors. Type in DRDREW, that's Dr. Drew, at checkout for savings 10%. We appreciate the many products they have to offer there. And we stand behind Mega and Pro Plus for treating metabolic syndrome, lowering cholesterol, as well as the sport product. It is a natural HMG-CoA reductase inhibitor and affects metabolic syndrome.
And I used to use Pro Plus
when
I was studying for my exams as a teenager.
Let me follow.
It was a lifesaver.
Let me follow up on this idea. And I wasn't being disrespectful of what you're doing or CBT is better. But most people that I deal with don't understand that it's not about your parents. That it's about the experience that happened to you and what it made you into. And if you focus too much on the parents and the trauma, that's what I heard you saying, you're just going to chase your own tail around.
Yeah.
It happened. They didn't do a great job. They didn't nurture and love you the way they should have. For whatever reason.
Well,
they didn't give a fuck about you. I don't know.
Well, they did
but
the best.
But it doesn't matter. They did not do the best.
They did
I disagree
the best
with that language.
With the resources
as Adam
Carolla
says,
available.
I don't want them to do their best. I want them to do my best.
That's brilliant. I will say that they did the best with the resources.
What's wrong with that?
Well, they did the best with their resources. The resources that they had available to them. And when I say resources, I mean their emotional, emotional, I don't like the word intelligence.
Well, then that removes the responsibility of each adult from their actions.
No, it doesn't.
Because you know that a parent, if they sexually abuse their child, they know it's wrong, but they do it anyways. That's not their best.
Okay, so...
And that goes on a lot more than America wants to admit.
I really hear you. And I really hear you.
So
it seems
to the victims like you're praising the parents. They did their best. No, they sexually abused you.
Sure.
That's not their best.
No, it is not. It is not. But if we look at it, or I choose to look at it from freeing the person. So I want to free the person who has that in their memories. This is what timeline's very good. It takes it out of, it doesn't remove the memory. It goes, okay, that happened. And now you're getting on with your life, because I disagree that it makes the person who they are. It informs their decisions. It influences their choices and their feelings, but it isn't who they are, because what we're going off is a memory.
It might, zero to three,
if you're neglected, not held, not nursed, and not nurtured,
makes them who they are.
It makes you who you
well,
are.
Well, I disagree because, Bob, I was also – I wasn't – sexually abused then. I did have physical and emotional abuse.
I think the horrible stuff that goes on, 0 to 3, not nursing. Not having closeness with the most important.
Let's just take the extreme biology.
I will challenge you both, and I will say this, because otherwise we are putting people in a fucking prison sentence.
Change is possible.
Yes,
insight and changing is possible.
Let's not get too Pollyannish here. The Romanian orphans, right? They had no human touch for the first 4 years of life. Many of them, we saw them at Las Encinas. Many of them were adopted here. They were angelic looking. They were very manipulative. And they would try to kill people and light people on fire and have no concept that that was something.
And
the part of the brain necessary for that doesn't exist.
Right.
And cannot exist.
Okay, so.
So they are so, forever. That's made them who they are.
Can
they heal from that?
Can they adjust to that is the question.
And I'm not dealing with those people who are putting people on fire.
Right.
Biting their siblings' fingers off.
Yeah.
We saw that. Yeah. I saw that. And I had to counsel that.
And no sense that something problematic.
Sure. And totally, okay. 15 minutes later, acting totally normal.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Well, then they have multiple personalities.
No, they have a brain disorder.
Or a brain disorder, whatever you want to call it. Yeah. I'm not dealing with those people. Just saying. Drew and Bob, they can be your people. I am not equipped to deal with those people. But the
slings and arrows that come at 7, at 10, at 12, the traumas, those big markers.
The routine traumas. The routine experiences
the everyday
of trauma.
Miseries.
Those are a misery. That's right. Routine misery.
Ordinary misery.
Yeah. The loss of a parent is significant.
Yeah, and abandonment.
Divorce. I'm divorced, and it's a harsh thing to look at, and we have conversations.
Way more impactful than people realize.
How is it any different than the death of a parent?
Yeah,
it's the death of the brain. How the child reads it and what it implants.
It's the death of a family.
Implants.
Yes, we do know now that here.
We're going to get
people.
A lot of emails that divorce is totally good for kids.
I can hear them right now. No, it isn't. It's the death of a family, and kids can be okay.
Yeah.
But it depends on what it marks.
Well, yes. And also, what we also want to look at is what happens afterwards. Because if you have two parents who love the child, of course the child will have something in their brain going alert, abandonment. Oh my gosh. Yeah, of course they're going to have that until they decide to look at it. However, it's much worse to have a child in fighting horrible families, having a blueprint of no love or a blueprint of a quiet house where there's such indifference, not even hate, where
emptiness.
There's just indifference, emptiness. Then that is actually the studies that I've read, although
neglect is very
that,
severe.
That can be more impactful. So I want to look at divorce. I think if it's
worse. I think that's worse. You want to know why?
That's what
because
I'm
when they grow up, they're told they had everything. What the fuck is wrong with you? I watch parents do it to their adult children every day.
Yeah, which
well,
you know,
okay,
exactly. And also, what you're doing with divorce, if you're able to deal with like a crisis like that in your life, the parent, what are you doing? You're giving your child a blueprint, and you're being able to say, "Listen, shit is going to happen," and you know what? You have gone through this. You're courageous. You, like, for example, Bob, you and your ex-wife, how adult you are, and you're still showing love to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And
but
that's an important lesson.
Different. And it's genuine.
But here's,
it's genuine.
But what you just described.
What the empty house?
I had a ton of that. What's the matter with you? Why, you know, you got everything. You're spoiled. Blah, blah, blah.
Right.
A ton of that. And so my.
It created workaholism.
Tunneling the fuck out. I had to tunnel out.
How come this generation doesn't tunnel out?
I don't know. I don't understand.
What do you mean by tunnel out?
Just go and
don't come back. Sleep in a laundromat. I used to sleep in laundromats because they're safe.
Any escape. Like the great. Papillon. it's like I'm in prison. I got to get out of here. And once out,
then
you know,
unleashed.
Freedom.
Yeah.
Freedom.
Yeah.
Freedom was always the big hot button for me.
But getting back to that,
and look at what you did to meet your need.
Yeah,
did anything to meet your need. Look at what you did. Safety.
And interestingly,
freedom.
But the future stuff that was confusing to me that you were just putting me through was about freedom.
And the railroad, the freedom, the railroad, John Henry. Freedom. Railroad. Get the fuck out.
Maybe.
Go. Freedom. Freedom Road.
No, it felt like some sort of more trauma thing. And I was wondering if maybe it's your
the Chinese making the railroad.
All right.
No. Well, you were the rest homes, the R's. Or the, I was, it was railroad, ramrod. I don't know.
It's fun,
okay.
though.
So what we... What
I have an
we...
image of a fire engine.
Oh,
maybe
dear.
I saw something.
Oh, well, we were supposed to be thinking about the equivalent of a toilet roll, but it's okay. Oh, no, not in that first bit.
The future.
Now we're talking about
the future.
I know. It's funny, actually, because when I first did that, I had no clue what timeline was. And when I first did it, and I was just like, whoa, my God, I can fucking fly. Mm. I want to fly. And then since in meditations, it has been so interesting. It really feels, it is freedom for me as well. So now I have to complete.
Want to know if interesting meditation technique I did with the flying? Because I've had flying dreams my whole life.
Oh.
So when you were doing that, I'm very familiar with that. So going up and I'm staying above and I'm looking down, right? In focused meditation to get rid of, you know, consciousness or whatever, uh-huh. I would go up and I'm seeing myself down below, and then like how a balloon goes up into the air and you can't see it anymore, and I disappear.
Ooh, that's
There's
cool.
nothing there well, above the, or below.
Well, that's what
it works.
But
if you
that's
can focus.
What mindfulness is supposed to be.
Yeah,
like awareness of awareness. You know, just
I got to get back into that. I used to do that every day for years, and then I just like
now,
started watching TV.
I have another,
you know, like the war broke
I have another
out.
Question. I have another.
I
question.
Swear to God.
So you talked about
CNN replaced my meditative
right,
practice.
Right, and how do you feel now?
Oh, traumatized. The world
right,
is ending.
Exactly. So,
it worked.
I actually say step away
Disconnect.
From the news. Because
well, now I've
we,
been it's funny. I've been telling that to patients a lot
right,
now. It's crazy. Because
right.
they're affected.
Well, you have
it.
To tell,
yeah,
tell
I,
even
I told
Facebook,
you.
Facebook
them,
is
them,
even
them,
more destructive.
But yes, that goes without saying. What I've said was I told them, I said, you listen to BBC and you can read The Economist. That's it.
Oh,
that's
brilliant.
All you can do. But hang on, do we need to take this break now?
Woo!
In a few minutes, we'll take a break. Okay. Well, what'd you say?
We're all talking at once.
Ah, no, not so much talking over each other.
I get angry emails.
Okay. Speaking of emails, our producer, the First Lady of Love, is going to give us some emails in a second.
Great.
She seems to like what we're doing, so we're going to go a little bit long today. So, my question was about you mentioned motivational something about 20 minutes ago.
Uh-huh.
You were talking about what this thing is not that
yes.
you're doing.
Yes.
You said something about motivational.
It isn't motivational
okay.
bullshit.
That's what you said.
Right.
And I thought, Didn't Simone go to a Tony Robbins thing or something? Wasn't she a convert? Wasn't she an evangelist? And wasn't I not skeptical and going, what the fuck is that really doing for
you?
You did. And so now tell me in retrospect.
Right.
Help me. Why do people go to that stuff? It doesn't make any sense.
It makes
sense
them feel
to me.
Better.
Well, if
it's
we...
just like church.
Now, it's...
That's interesting.
Tony Robbins is, I think, he's what we would call it in the UK... Marmite. Marmite is this really disgusting, well, I love it actually, this spread that you put on your toast and
it's like,
you
like
either
Vegemite.
Love it,
it's like Vegemite.
Vegemite. You either love it or you hate it. And even the adverts in the UK go, you either love it or you hate it. Because they just know, so they've embraced it. So Tony Robbins can be like Marmite. So if I look at the people who love him, there are some people who have... I don't know how we're also judging this, but there are some people who have got the motivation from him to go off. And typically, he's brilliant with regards to money and business and entrepreneurship. Now, if that...
I don't buy that either because he... So he talks to...
A bunch of people who want to be entrepreneurs and tells them, go be an entrepreneur.
Right. There's that. Or people are already hyper-achieving and on their way. Or he talks to Bill Gates and goes, see, the guy's a genius.
Right.
After he's already way along. And the guy, you know, it's just, come on.
So also what I've got to look at is in the sense of it, if we look at results... And right, all of us have results. What Tony Robbins is doing
is—he's talked to millions of people. You would think there'd be millions of successful people out there,
right?
Why is the unemployment rate 5%?
Right, and
what's going on? I thought he was going to correct all that.
Right, and
well,
and
between
also,
Trump University and Tony Robbins, I don't know what the fuck's going on.
So, to me, for instance, just what you're describing to me as infinitely more potential of helping somebody than standing in a room and being part of it. I'd rather you go to a football game and have a group experience that way, you know, or go to a whatever.
What about the true praising of the what we always talk about in our politics, but don't really praise what it really is, the small business owner that starts a business and they work there themselves and their cousin. And then it starts to take success, and then they hire people, and then it gets a little more successful. And they hire people, and they change 12 people's lives.
That's been vilified for the last 10 years.
That's been vilified. That's more important to me than Tony Robbins telling a bunch of millionaires they're going to be billionaires.
Completely agree.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, and I agree.
And that needs to be honored, not just in political speech, but in personal respect.
I was on a plane last night, and they were talking. They were on there. I was like, oh, my God. Veterans can get all these franchises and things at reduced rates. There's so many opportunities out there for people. We're not showing them. We're not encouraging them. We have to inspire people, not motivate them. We just need to just
right.
You know what I mean?
Right. And this is where I'm sort of broadening my brand. Like people, a lot of people, the entry point. Yes, there are referrals from people who have either stopped their meth habit and been clean, but now they're a sex addict. I see that so much.
That's our bread and butter.
Oh my gosh! Right,
stick around another half hour.
Yeah, we got a couple of coming in.
And also, like, if I'm using this language, but also, you know, people who then become addicted to love and etc. What I believe in is the work that I do. It facilitates somebody so that it's their brain doing the magic and they get a sense that they come in, the entry point may be a relationship, but actually they change at a fundamental level because my big thing is somebody having faith in themselves.
I just thought of something.
Why it's more like religion than it is about business.
Well, you're back
or self-help
to Tony Robbins,
psychology.
But I'm thinking about Simone again. And the reason everything you said is wonderful and glorious, but the reason it all works, think about what you were feeling when Simone was making a sail over the house. Mm-hmm. What did she do? Why did it work so well?
She's excellent at what she does.
That's her. Right. She's an instrument. She is an instrument.
I would have never done it with some other goofy therapist.
That's right. So as usual.
I got 10 times the cynicism both of you put together.
It's true.
But I trusted you because I've known you. Well, I trust Roland, my therapist. I trust this other teacher I had, Shenzhen. Yeah. Right. I trust them.
Yeah.
Trust is what it's about.
Yeah.
And trust has something to do with me about respect.
Well,
like I have to respect the person. Right. I don't respect Tony Robbins. He's a con artist. I'm sorry. I can spot con artists because I'm a junkie. I'm a con artist myself. Right?
Well, I will say that he did a documentary, and this is just from an NLP point. I'm no passing judgment.
Anybody can lease a helicopter. I just want everyone at home to know that.
He says in NLP, one of the things is that the brain doesn't process, or the unconscious mind does not look at negatives. So, for example, in England, when you say, how are you? And somebody says, oh, I'm not bad. And then we wonder why we're miserable. It's because the brain is just hearing, I'm bad, I'm bad. It's not, I'm not bad, as in I'm okay. It cannot process the not. It just looks at that word bad. It connects with the word bad. It has a meaning with the word bad. And so Tony Robbins, his title of his documentary was, I'm not your guru.
Yeah.
And for all the good work, I have an issue with that because it doesn't feel authentic, because anyone who reads up about NLP on the internet will know from their perspective, which Tony Robbins is trained in, that the not is not processed. So the message is a hypnotism. So it's, I'm your guru. And we use that actually in hypnosis a lot with people who
are you doing hypnotherapies?
Yeah.
Have you been the subject of hypnotherapies?
Yes.
What's that like for you?
It was sort of hypnotherapy with NLP. It was fantastic because it added to like the timeline experience, where I've sort of dealt with like having an off switch from my thoughts. And I would say that I still need more practice with that, but having an off switch from my thoughts, and I heard like one of my parents' voices, like whose voice is it that I'm hearing? I heard, and then I found it a tremendously amazing experience. And then what was wonderful was I got tested that night. And when I say tested, I had an experience, an event that could have been so traumatic. And it was the night before doing my master in NLP. And it was like, oh my gosh. So what was happening? I just actually started laughing, and really not in a mean way, but I couldn't stop laughing because in the hypnosis, I didn't realize I just started laughing and laughing and laughing. It was wonderful. I swear, Bob, honestly, I
you're in this whole world of, you
love
know,
it.
You know, one of the kind of iconic stories about Eastern coming to West is the Yogananda, right? So, Drew, I don't know if you're familiar with the story. The Yogananda comes here. Gurus in India and what was Pakistan or whatever used to just show up and teach meditation, teach yoga, right? And it was just a cultural thing that people brought him food, they brought him flowers, they brought him a blanket to sleep on or whatever. And this went on for thousands of years, Drew. Mm. So the Yogananda gets this message from whatever, God consciousness, to go to America and teach, right? So he comes here and he does that, and it's all free, and nobody shows up, or half houses, right? And he goes all the way through in a 12-city tour, Chicago, L.A., starts in L.A., goes to Chicago, New York, Boston, and it's a failure. And all his followers are like, what the fuck are we doing here? We got like 100 people, you know, we got to transport across the country for you to teach people who don't show up about this, and they're doubting their master. And he said, you know what, schedule another meditation meeting in Los Angeles, but charge $1.
Oh, yeah, well, that's, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That is what all that came after is about.
Well, but
because America doesn't value anything it doesn't pay for. And Tony has tapped into America wants to be rich. So pay me and I'll tell you how to be rich.
Yeah.
And this is mimicked throughout television.
And then now if it then becomes pay me and I'll tell you how to be rich, then that's okay. Then it's not pay me and I'll tell you how to transform your life and you'll become you'll be able to love and you'll be able to do this, because that is two different messages. But it's really interesting. I really want to get in with into this with following on from what Bob was saying about how the way I figured out, it was only last week, I figured out why was my sex therapy so successful? And people were staying with me way after the sexual issue had been solved.
Mm-hmm. Because they were scared to leave you.
Hang on. What? So what?
Well, no. I will say no, because they kept learning.
Yeah.
And what was happening was I figured this out.
Can we say kept growing? Is that a more accurate?
Yeah. Yeah, learning and growing.
Growing.
Growing. But learning about themselves and their potential.
But the question would
which
be,
is
but
growing,
the question,
yeah.
Simone, is
but not
did
growing
they,
out.
Did they need
not
you?
Not expanding.
Did they need you to continue growing and learning? Probably not. But,
well,
but they were so attached to you, they think that you're, that's the thing
Bob,
that you have to disconnect
Bob,
from.
Bob, here's what happens. Because I went through this in my own therapy.
Okay.
What happens is eventually you stop growing. And the therapist is aware of it and goes, I think, you know, this is ending. And then, the patient has sort of arrived at their own conclusion. And when I arrived at it, I went, I got to get out of here. I started working again. And it took me 3 years to get out. In other words, I did a termination. You have all kinds of feelings about the termination, which is really the rapprochement phase of development.
Now,
where you're coming and going and coming and going and learning to be out in the world away from your attachment.
Yeah. Now, I will say to both of you, and I have to come back once I've really sorted this out in
my
mind.
Okay. Then we got to go to break. Say it.
Okay. Well, I'm just going to say this very quickly. I don't think it's people are attached. What they're attached to is their growth and their potential. Now, let me just say this. I'll try and say it in a sentence. It's never going to happen, Bob. My brain is way too linear. Non-linear. What happens is they learn the body skills, they learn breath, and suddenly they see that this, and they learn about
Simone,
who they are.
I need to speak to your unconscious. May I speak to your unconscious?
We're
going to take a commercial break.
I will, but first I need to speak to your unconscious. May I speak to your unconscious?
Yes.
You're afraid of people attaching to you
that
way.
Yeah, you don't like it.
Take a break. Be right back.
It's a huge responsibility.
We'll be right back. National Assessment Foundation, it is the first not-for-profit concierge service developed for those suffering with drug and alcohol addiction. They provide you with professionals that you need. They have recovering people and well-trained people doing the assessments, and they refer to high-quality programs, and they follow up to make people sure they get into a program. And even those without coverage, without any resources, they will help them get treatment as well. And it is free of charge. They're a group of dedicated professionals whose goal is to help. They have a good knowledge base. They are connected to thousands of recovery specialists across the country. And most importantly, they are the one for you. The team is built of recovering addicts. As I said, they've been where you've been. They've been there and back many times. And they believe that your treatment should be as unique and as individualized as you. They custom build the plan and the referral. They believe that money should not stand in the way of quality treatment you deserve. And they will advocate on your behalf to ensure you get the best treatment available and be sure your disease doesn't prevent you from getting onto that treatment. And you should not worry about planning the treatment where you stay. You've got enough on your plate dealing with the disease of addiction. They will take care of everything. They will even help with travel arrangements on your behalf. That is the National Assessment Foundation at 888-494-9186. Again, 888-494-9186.
So now we're back, and we're going to talk about attachment for 5 seconds.
No, but first I want to say that our crack producer gave me a bunch of emails we're going to get into in a second. It's really interesting. The most interesting thing about reading everybody's emails, in the first sentence, they're just out with they I know exactly what they're talking about. Then they tell their story, but they're all very clear, every single email.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
And what's made them more clear is me being unclear.
You're unconscious, being fearful of attachment.
The contrast.
So, Bob?
Well, I wouldn't say that. I tell you, I think what I'm trying to express, and let me say I'm not thinking, what I want to express is that when a person and through our experience is or learning and growing and getting something from the experience, then this is absolutely fantastic. They stay mm-hmm. as long as they want to
yeah.
stay. And
yeah.
for some people, that can be different. And some people don't want to go into like big, big, big expansion. For me, I'm just somebody that just wants to go in and in and in and in because I'm an enormously curious person like the both of you.
Mm.
And even if I – look, I've done timeline. I don't have the same trauma. I know I'm not reaching my full potential because I'm not the Dalai Lama. Have I reached enlightenment? Have I when somebody is mean to me, am I like, oh, good, they've got it out.
You know my favorite saying?
Yeah.
They asked the Dalai Lama what's wrong with the world, and he could have said, you know, China or
yeah.
a million things, selfishness or whatever. He just said, lack of insight. which is a very spiritual way of saying people are stupid and selfish.
Yes, yes, that's brilliant.
Insight.
And so,
Did you ever hear that, Drew?
People,
he asked the Dalai Lama what was wrong with the world. He said, "Lack of insight."
Yeah, yeah.
Brilliantly put into three words. I'll learn from him.
All right.
So they learn different things. That's what I'm saying. And because I'm trained in so many different areas,
yeah.
It's
but I'm telling you, the Bob is right. It's the attachment that's the primary mechanism.
Here's the thing. He and I can attach and detach, right?
Right.
So you don't have to worry about being with us. Yeah. But you get six or eight of the people that are on that sex addiction show, you're in trouble. Yeah. you're attachment outgunned.
Yeah, yeah.
Of what it takes to help them.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So
one of the things that's coming out of research over and over again is that it doesn't matter which technique you use, the empathic attunement of the therapist is what determines the outcome.
Yes,
that's
yes,
all
yes.
I'm saying to you.
The compassion.
So let's be empathic with our email.
Yeah, we got a lot of interesting emails. We got some addiction things, some Suboxone things, some sex therapy things. Let's go back in the sex therapy.
How are they different?
Yeah, they're very. Been to my own doctor. This is Nina. She had blood work done. Her libido dropped. It's slowly coming back, but still frustrating the man I'm dating. I just doubt I'm premenopausal because I'm 25 years old. What could it be? What would the most normal reason 25-year-old drop in libido?
Drugs.
Medication, yeah.
Was going to say medication.
For a birth control pill, no one tells them the birth control pill does that, and it really does it a lot.
And
it can persist afterwards, sometimes for years. There's a guy named Andrew Goldstein who, if you go to Dr. Drew podcast, one of the earlier podcasts.
Is he a stand-up comedian?
No. He's got research on the estrogen receptors and the progesterone receptors and how certain individuals with these so-called long receptors are very prone to this phenomenon of libido drop and even after the drug is gone.
Long meaning deep receptor sites?
The proteins are longer.
For me, that's
in the addiction area. You know that.
Right, okay.
There you go, especially meth.
What is
meth? Well, meth closes up the receptor sites. How about that?
Some people, it increases libido, which is what's weird. And most meth addicts have real shutdown libido after they stop.
Can I say, to add to, what's the name? Are we allowed to say?
Yeah.
Nina.
But what else is dropping her libido? Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, this has brought up an interesting thing in her relationship. Mm-hmm. So how is the frustration being communicated? Because now we're going into unconscious stuff. I remember being in a relationship and for the first time ever, I had painful sex. I'm not saying I've got a really wide vagina. I wish I had, but I really haven't. I'm very small. And right now, I tell you, I'm like a born-again virgin. But beside the point. And I remember having...
I don't need to talk to your subconscious this badly.
Yeah. You did it, Drew. You did it.
Some painful.
So I had painful sex. And I couldn't figure out why. This was way before I was a sex therapist. I could not figure out why. And then... about a month later, I ended up in hospital for 2 weeks. They thought I had meningitis. They thought I had a brain tumor. And this was in England, where we don't put people in hospital. It was 10 days, actually. And I had lumbar puncture and all the rest of it and brain scans. And it was my body. I use the word shut down, but I don't think that's a proper term. But basically, my body, I believe, it was connected to my emotions. I wasn't expressing my emotions. So I'd shut down. Guess what happened? As soon as it was idiopathic, they're not going to say it's like emotional. About three steps out of the hospital, this was with the same person, I went, oh my God, I'm a common denominator. I found out the guy, like as in for these abusive relationships, I found out the guy had a $50,000, which is $70,000, $80,000 a year cocaine habit. I wasn't aware of that.
You know this guy.
I'm sure I do.
Mm.
Anybody that's got that much stuff for coke, I know.
I know this guy too.
And oh my gosh. So
you know I knew this, right? Wasn't it you? Is it this guy?
This was in England.
Oh.
Anyway, I'm sure there are, let's say, many people like him.
Yes.
And
80,000 is a lot.
It's a lot.
But a sociopath, a sociopath will make you sick. Because you think you're crazy all the time. You're always questioning everything. You can't get your feet under you.
Right. And I was like, oh, he's very jittery. Point being, sexually what happened? Shut. There was a shutting. Mm-hmm. There was pain. I did not trust. Yeah. So I didn't want this person in me.
Yeah.
But yet, my body was letting me know. And it wasn't just saying about penis to vagina. It was basically saying, you do not want to be connected with this person. So that's what I'm saying.
All right.
I'm not saying that that is the case for
Here's
her.
Here's another one. Here's a simple one.
But she also could be depressed.
I hope she's not reading this with her boyfriend.
She is with a boyfriend.
So the point is, let's summarize it. So there could be interpersonal
medication
issues.
Medication is what I
medication
would think.
Is number one. Interpersonal issues, mood issues, anxiety issues, on down the line.
And
she's had a thorough medical workup, which is good.
Right. And if the frustration is being dealt with in a really adult, beautiful way, it can bring them closer.
Right.
So okay, it could be an opportunity.
An easy one, but I'm not going to get into the weeds on this one. This is from Rachel.
Drew, when is the time going to come? See, this is why I'm still working on myself. Like, my thoughts... We need
Stay
to be a little
Stay
bit
with
more
me.
Linear.
Stay with
oh,
me.
I like being in the unconscious group. He's hypnotized me.
Rachel wants to know, embarrassing but intimate, important question. This is a sex question. She essentially, it's pretty graphic, she has discovered anal sex and really enjoys it, both parts of it. But she has hemorrhoids, and she has bleeding. So, what does she do?
Well, that's over to you.
Oh, I would always defer to Dr. Drew on that one.
Thank you for that.
I felt like I was on Love Lines in 1987.
It is an issue. Sometimes there are operative interventions for that, and of course there are various.
Wouldn't you just stop until it all cleared up and then continue?
She really needs to see a proctologist to see how severe these things are.
Oh gosh!
And to see,
you know who was a proctologist? Dr. Bob. From AA.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't
That's
know
what he
that.
Was.
That's
Can you imagine?
Well, we call them. Well, no,
I didn't even know that word
a
existed.
Well,
of AA.
Today we call them colorectal surgeons.
Oh, there you go. So, that's much nicer. Flowery.
Yes.
And there's operative repairs for this kind of thing. There's banding. There's all kinds of stuff.
I feel like I'm listening to Love Lines in the 90s.
Slow down. There are creams and things and treatments and softeners and there's lots of things to be done. But you really need somebody to look at what's going on there and really define.
Remember how indignant you used to get about all the anal sex calls on Love Lines?
No, listen.
You were like, what the fuck are you doing for the girls feeling like they had to do
that's
it?
That's what I got indignant about. They were saying, this is incredibly painful. I hate
it. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But my boyfriend really likes it. So what do I do to tolerate this misery?
Oh my God.
That's not what Rachel is saying. Rachel's saying, I'm dig it and I don't want to hurt myself. Yeah. So fine. All right, here we go. So,
can I ask something that might be on the audience's mind as well? Does anal sex cause hemorrhoids?
Yes. Well, in people that are prone. Not everyone gets them.
Right, okay.
So, this is a bunch of interesting stuff.
Alcoholism causes it too, doesn't it?
Can. Yeah. Liver
anal
disease.
Sex.
Liver disease. No. Liver disease.
Oh, yeah, both.
Yeah.
Liver disease can cause hemorrhoids.
They're
really... horrible ones, in fact. Okay, so here we go.
I never had that. I'm just talking about... I read it in Charles Bukowski. I just wanted
to... I have a substance problem.
Just clear that up, yeah.
This Bridget woman, she... Let's see how old she is. She has a substance problem. I have a bright 4-year-old daughter. I have allowed a fellow addict into her life who has a 3-year-old daughter. I want to work to heal us both for the sake of our daughters and the newly formed family.
How long are they
family.
Sober? How long
They're
are
not
they sober?
Sober. They're using...
Oh, dear.
Two anvils trying to keep each other afloat.
Call the National Assessment Foundation.
Yeah, here's
888-494-9186. You each go to different treatment centers, see what happens. Get grandma to watch the children.
You cannot affect or be responsible for one another's treatments. You're right. Get the kids in the hands of another family member. And,
you know, that is the weirdest thing.
And all the kids
go
care
to the
about.
Grandparents who probably caused the thing.
No, I know.
I know.
Well, you know what it usually is?
But it's just like, what else? Who else is going to watch a kid?
But to be
Your
fair.
Your sister.
But Bob, the real perpetrator is usually somebody who's not there anymore. And the one left behind is often a capable caretaker. But we need the kids. You know, people go, I can't leave my kids. The kids
you can. You leave them all the time to go get dope.
Right. Not only that, but the kids are in misery when you're around. So all they need to know is that you're sick, you're in treatment, you're getting well, and they are happy with that explanation, believe me.
And just to add in what we were talking about earlier about attachment, somebody can be physically there, but the child will not feel
Again,
their,
that's me. That's
yeah,
me.
Their emotional connection.
Need help with mother-in-law. She's been on Londra's meds for 10-plus years, including morphine. She's depressed, won't leave the house, diagnosed with anemia. Doctors won't help her get off the meds. She is missing grandkids' entire life. What do I do?
What meds?
Matt.
Come on, what meds?
You know, we could list
them.
It's the usual. Yeah, it's the usual list. So
how old is the
grandma? We don't know. They don't give us that. But there is certain people that you aren't going to treat successfully. She may be one of those people. Suboxone might be an excellent alternative for that.
They don't want it, though. I've recommended it to 72-year-old clients. They don't want it. Yeah. It doesn't do anything. I choose to believe that these people like this are what the ASAM created this thing in, I don't know, 15 years ago, saying pseudo addict. Mm. The woman's a pseudo addict.
What does that mean?
It's just a term that, because there are so many prescription drug addicts coming to what had primarily been alcohol and illicit drug treatment, they were kind of not fitting in and it wasn't working right. So ASAM, the American Society of Addiction Medicine, tried to figure out, what are we going to call this new breed of addict?
Well,
and they called pseudo addict, and I liked that name, and then people don't like it.
We don't have it anymore now.
Why?
Well,
that's what they kind of are. They're not junkies.
I understand, but now we have this whole new category, the DSM whatever we're into is now got a whole different way of analyzing this. It's substance use disorder.
Yeah, they made it
substance
disorder,
use disorder
that.
With dependency. I know of no way to.
Is there a personality component of the diagnosis?
They've taken away the axes, so you can't really. It's all very confusing. It's going to be refined, believe me. But here's the deal. I know of no way to create stigma more powerfully than to say, we can't say that word. Don't call him an addict. No, not addiction. That stigmatizes him. Are you kidding? So now the word addiction is verboten. And it's insane that we don't call addicts addicts. It's insane because we don't want to stigmatize them, which is characteristic of what's really happened in my profession, where they coddle addicts. Oh, no, I understand. What's important is that you're coming to me and listening to me. It's like they believe everything.
We need a new drug treatment that deals with that population or that
the
kind
old lady.
Of client.
Okay, well,
right?
We've wondered,
dealt with them. Remember the lady that walked and moved in next door and kept taking walks?
Yeah.
It was weird. We had a client and she just – she liked us so much, she just got the apartment next door to the hospital, and she would come on her walks.
Yeah. Do you know, that reminds me of a story where
she also had recurring remitting sobriety, too, but I loved her.
Okay, this is just like a slight side note, but it reminds me of when my father has his grave, or whatever we call it, there was a woman who was at Peter Sellers is there, and she was the biggest Peter Sellers fan. She was alive. She was 35, but she booked and rented the space next to Peter Sellers so she could be next to him.
All right, you guys made me lose my train of thought. What were we talking about?
We're talking about that woman, the 65.
You were talking about
what I was
going to
say.
Multiple medicine.
Here you go. So I'm not even sure, for instance, that Prince was an addict. He might have been one of these drug abusing dependent, drug use disorder dependent, but not what we would call an addict in the sense.
But see, I always go to the personality. He had obsessive compulsive personality disorder.
Yeah.
Obviously,
maybe.
He had attachment disorder. Yeah. He lived alone by himself in a recording.
He
had workaholism. He had perfectionism to the point that, and I say this to a lot of my musician friends, at a certain point, you can't do what you did in your 20s. Physically, you can't do it.
Yeah.
Prince refused to acknowledge that he was having degenerative hip
I doubt it. I think what he was having was chronic pain from chronic opiate use.
I saw him walking at the Lakers game one time. It was like watching an old basketball player walk.
I understand, but you know how the opiates really make that intolerable.
Yeah, you know, can't tolerate getting up in the morning.
Right.
The best thing ever. Pat W. said to me, like, he was on a prescription drug withdrawal, And I said, dude, how are you doing today? And he goes, my eyelashes hurt.
but drug addicts,
you just numb yourself to the human experience.
But opiates are sort of chronically like that. They're chronically in some state like that. So let's keep moving. One more question. 44, I've been addicted to drugs most of my life. I thought I found a miracle in Suboxone 6 years ago. Now I'm in worse shape. My memory is going. My bones are brittle. I lost all my teeth. The drug is dead in my life. I can never fix.
That was going to happen anyway.
Yeah, I know. I'm sending this in hopes to get me some good help. Again, call the National Foundation. I will go anywhere in the USA to get detoxed. So the bottom line is that Suboxone is a temporizing measure. It can save lives. But let's deal with the shoe that needs to fall.
Can we deal with the mythology about methadone and now Suboxone? Doesn't get into your bone marrow.
No,
it's all this nonsense. Even clinicians repeat that
stuff,
Drew.
I know. Listen.
It's ridiculous. No medicine goes into your bone marrow.
Listen, you want to You know how you're chronically dependent on nicotine gum?
Yes, I'll have some right now.
I had a fight with a cardiologist about that. Like they were like, oh, no, nicotine's terrible. I'm like, nicotine's nothing. There's all kinds of weird misconceptions.
It's expensive,
out there.
That's all.
For sure.
But one thing that... Now he's saying Suboxone caused all that. No, malnutrition, long-term drug use.
He's probably on high
older.
Dose of Suboxone, yeah, yeah. Whatever. But happily, he should get off, and that's the whole point. It's about
you
having
always
a flourishing
get new teeth.
Life. Have a flourishing life is what you and I are interested in, Bob. That's what we like to treat.
The British don't believe
much the way
that.
You don't want to treat the Romanian orphans, we don't want to treat the uninterested in recovery. The people.
I don't want to treat anybody that thinks Tony Robbins has a solution.
It's so weird to me that he's had such
but he
success
for decades.
It's
well,
not
like just, 4 or 5 years.
But so he must be doing something for people, or there would be outing. You know what I mean? People would
right,
out
so
this.
He's a good guy.
I imagine he's a good guy.
You remember he wanted to buy Los Encinas at one point.
Yeah,
and he was not so much of it.
No, he was a nice guy.
No, I think he's a nice guy. Here's the thing. There's some gurus that are nice guys. Dalai Lama's a guru. I don't care what you say. He's a leader of a bunch of people follow his word. There's a lot of responsibility that comes with that. Right?
I don't understand the word. I have a little bit of confusion with what do we mean by the word guru? Because guru, people get addicted to Tony Robbins. They get addicted. And I've heard him on... I know why
go to Malibu. People get addicted to the Dalai Lama. So maybe the hugging nun, all that stuff.
Maybe they're
just
addicted to the high that he creates in that group experience.
Yeah.
I think it's an arrogance and a narcissism myself, personally. There's a component of it.
For him or the patients?
For the people that want to be so spiritual. There's a piety to it that doesn't exist in real religion.
Let's
sanctimonious, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that was a very generalized. So not everybody wants spirituality
or wants to get
in touch with that in them.
Of course.
No, I'm not saying that.
Yeah.
I'm saying there's...
I just wanted to clarify that for anyone listening.
I've witnessed the whole self-help movement. I was born and raised in Los Angeles. My sisters went to the screaming thing, primal therapy. I mean, it was all around. Right. Landmark Forum, all this stuff. Yeah. All the weird stuff goes on in L.A. You ever wonder why that is? Because L.A. is a transient population. They come from all over to go be and become. Right?
Well, good, because then they can all come to me and
actually become.
Yes.
Actually become.
Actually become.
Right. With that, we'll have to say farewell. Where can they find you? Yeah, where do they come to you?
My website is currently being done. So you can get in touch, actually.
It'll be Simone._! at, she adds all these weird things to
I did when I didn't understand Twitter. Anyone can get in touch. It's either info@SimoneBien.com or if you Google
one word, Simone Bien.
B-I-E-N-N-E. Yeah, you'll find me.
All right. Be sure to check out what's happening at Dr.com as well. Please, new shows, new articles every week. And don't forget Weekly Infusion, the Dr. Drew podcast, the Anima Dr. Drew podcast. And as you see, we try to get your emails at the contact list, Dr.com/contact. Also, as I said, visit the other shows there as well. Don't forget our National Assessment Foundation and Bergamet. And
what's the phone number again, Bob? Slowly.
888-494-9186.
We'll have it
so
up on the website.
888-494-9186.
We'll have it up the website.
Anybody you know that's got addiction problems and you know they want to figure out if they can go somewhere, call that number.
All right.
Yeah, I will.
Thank you guys. We'll
and also we'll put a link on drdrew.com where you can find Simone Bien.
Okay, good.
And get all your therapy.
Well, right. I want to get Simone to work with me in Laguna. That's the next.
Well, that's that'll be after.
Yes.
That's our after show. All right, we'll see you next time. Bye.
Humphreys on.